Hi, this is Cheyenne, and it is Thursday, November 5th. I'm here with the Noon Group. We've got John and Amanda and Aaron and Earl and Brian so far. Other folks might be joining us. John and Amanda, you were going to start us with a check-in.
We are. So just for knowledge about us, we're John and Amanda Moore. We have a 9-year-old and a 7-year-old. Last week we talked about, you know, what we wanted to take aim at, which was, or 2 weeks ago. Sibling rivalry. So we have two comments or two areas to check in on. One is sibling rivalry. We had moved the girls into the same room and put them in bunk beds, and it wasn't working. So last week, Amanda and I took the bunk beds down and put them side by side, which actually created what we think is a better environment and requires the girls to be eye to eye. I think it's like email. You can send a nasty email to someone because you never have to look them eye to eye. Well, you can yell from the top bunk to the bottom bunk or vice versa when you're not looking eye to eye, and we've noticed that it's had a positive impact. So that's the step we took, and it's had a positive impact. The second thing that we've been working on, especially with Abby, was going to sleep on time. And so Amanda did some research, talked about or looked at, you know, what actions can you take as the evening progresses to make it easier for your child to fall asleep. You know, things such as making sure they see the sun first thing in the morning, dimming the lights, quieting the activity and the noise. And so it's had somewhat of a positive impact on Abby, and her getting more sleep has helped her behavior. We still have a ways to go in both areas.
Yeah.
So that's our
challenge. No, but it sounds like you're tackling a couple things, but you're doing them one at a time, and it sounds like you're making some good progress. Congratulations. Amanda, anything you want to add before I move on?
I think that starting the whole bedtime process a lot earlier has helped. So we pretty much eat dinner and head upstairs. We are they're getting in their pajamas by before 7 o'clock. So that you know, if I want them to be asleep by 8, I figured that's kind of what we have to do, because, and then I turn out all the lights and they have a very dim reading light because Abby needs that transition. And I make sure it's, you know, very just enough to read by, to help with the melatonin levels. I keep thinking there's so much more to the evening, but to get them asleep by 8, that's what we have to do.
Yep. Awesome. Okay. And I see Chiquita joined us. Hi.
Hey, it's Chiquita, and my check-in is a little bit different. I wanted to just say thanks. I met Diane in person today. She did a presentation at my son's school, and I just wanted to tell the group that, you know, this is my second year doing the Parent Success System, and it felt really good to have had some accomplishments that I could share with other parents who are going through some of the similar things that I was going through or have been going through with my son. So just wanted to say thank you, and it was a pleasure meeting you in person today.
Well, and Chiquita, thank you for sharing, you know, your experience with the parents who were there, and I know you do that every week in these groups, and it was nice to meet you in person as well. Thanks.
Great, thanks.
Who else wants to check in?
This is Erin. I'm happy to go.
Go for it.
So I have 3 daughters, 9, 8, and 6, and last session I was taking aim on my middle daughter and her impulsive kind of lashing out with her arms and kind of hitting back, kind of punching back sort of thing. And I have to say, it hasn't happened a single time since we talked. And
wow.
I don't know if just our routine has been different, or we're really making improvements, but I introduced the rope thing for the whole family, and nobody has had to use it, but I think just knowing that it's available has been real helpful. We talked about triggers with all the kids and what makes you feel really angry, where you're just going to, you know, kind of lash out, and what we can do to make other people not get to that point. And it's been great, and we've been doing, I started doing some essential oils and diffusing those in all of my kids' rooms at night, like lavender and really peaceful things. I notice in the afternoons, a couple of times I put something in that was more energizing, and my middle daughter was a total lunatic. So we're doing more peaceful things around the house like that, and I have to say I really think it's all making a big difference.
Awesome. Isn't it nice when you focus in on something and you can see the progress, and even if you don't know why, sometimes it's just paying attention to it that makes a difference. So good for you guys, Erin. Okay, so Brian, are you still
I'm not
on mute?
I'm still with us, and don't try to jump for the get a whole another half hour or so.
Okay.
So well, I really feel like I'm just not living up to the rest of this group here. They're kind of like leapfrogging our progress because everyone else is doing great. We have had some really good successes. You know, we've got five kids, 16, 14, 11, 9, and a 15-month-old, I guess almost 16-month-old. And our 11 and 9 both have ADHD, and our 11-year-old also has autism, and he's the one we really struggle with. So we were trying to really work on paying attention to where he was having problems with transitions and when he's really struggling to activate his brain and help him with some more tools and then kind of capitalize on successes and put him in other situations where he could perform better and then just give him more individual attention. So I think we've done well in some areas on that last week. You know, we had the big World Series win here in the Kansas City area. You know, games and those kind of things where there's a ton of commotion are very difficult for him and he struggles with situations. So we really made some decisions to not put him in those situations where he wouldn't be successful. He was very comfortable staying home and watching the games from the couch. And, in fact, he decided he was the good luck charm that if he stayed home on the couch and drank root beer, the Royals would win. So we watched a couple games of him doing that. And then, you know, it was the Halloween time, so all of that is a struggle for him as well. We did go to one family party with him and really kind of prepped him first on it, you know, with some of the appropriate behavior and guidelines, and then tried to check in with him a little bit and, you know, give him little breaks, and that seemed to work pretty well. So we're continuing to work on that. We did do a medication change on him as well to up his afternoon dose of one of his medications to hopefully help him be a little more even keel and have the attention span and focus. So we're continuing trying to fine-tune those things, improved, and not making the light year strides that others are making, but doing better.
Well, and Brian, the thing that I love about what you're doing is that you're focusing on prevention, and that sometimes is the, you know, the longer tail work because, you know, you're raising the awareness in the family, you're spending a lot of time kind of noticing what works and what doesn't, but it sounds like he was really engaged in some of the solutions you guys put forward, which is great. He had fun with the whole root beer and watching TV at home thing, and everybody has different progress every week, and I'm sure, you know, you're going to be, everybody's going to be admiring the progress you're doing as well. So it's a marathon. What's the quote? It's a marathon, not a sprint.
That's right.
Awesome. Okay. So who did I miss? 1, 2, 3, 4.
You got
me.
Oh, Earl, thank you.
We have a 12-year-old daughter and an 11-year-old son who are both ADHD and fetal alcohol syndrome, and then they have a 7-year-old birth sibling as well who is in the gifted program because their birth mother happened to be in rehab while she was pregnant for him. And so this year, for the first time, the psychiatrist, the psychologist, the resource teachers from last year, after about 3 weeks, the teachers they had this year, and also about the same time, the teachers they had last year, all kind of came to us and said, you know, we think the kids should be tested for autism as well. So it was kind of like a waterfall effect. And so we're meeting with a new doctor next week to see if he's willing to take us on even as a family, let alone to do the testing. So that's kind of where we are clinically. The kids are on medication, the two older ones. And then for success, my daughter is just, this is October. They don't start school here in Milwaukee until after Labor Day. And for the first time since the first week of sixth grade, this week was the first week ever that she's come home with no demerit. So we're having a big celebration tonight.
Awesome.
Yeah, yesterday she came home and she had no demerits on her weekly report, and so it's a big deal for us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very hard not to talk, not to respond to any sort of verbal prompt from any corner of the world. And so for her to do that is really a big deal.
Awesome.
It's something we've worked for 11 years, but got through.
So celebrate when you can. That's great
definitely
to do that.
Okay.
So I'm going to go back. So the next step is really to take aim. And I know some of you are going to continue to work on the things that you worked on for the last couple weeks, and that's appropriate. You know, just a couple reminders. When we take aim, we want to do it very specifically. So it's not just on homework. It's maybe, you know, one section of the process of homework that's particularly challenging for your child. And then you want to take aim on the solution, rather, you don't want to take aim on the solution, you want to take aim on the problem. So you, you know, sometimes it's kind of like, okay, I'm going to take aim on getting my child to use his planner for his homework. Well, that's a solution, and what we really want to focus in on is solving the problem, which is my child needs a process for capturing his assignments. And so that's kind of my two-second advice about taking aim. And Chiquita, I'm going to go back to you, and I'm going to ask you to celebrate because you really didn't. You celebrated meeting me, which is always fun. But you know, take a minute and celebrate, and then tell us where you're going to take aim.
Okay. So, can you go to someone else? I'm still trying to focus on exactly what it is I want to celebrate. Can you come back to me?
I can come back to you. I can absolutely. So who can tell us? John and Amanda, you want to tell us where you're going to take aim?
Sorry, I had to get it off mute. So we both talked about it, and we feel like we really need to take aim at the girls speaking respectfully to each other as well as to us.
So respectful communication, is there a particular scenario where you want to focus in on? Because you know, during the day, the reason I'm asking is because sometimes there's certain times of the day that it's harder and it's easier, and if they don't do it all day long, you want to be able to celebrate some of the successes.
Absolutely. It really comes out when they're tired, which I think, you know, getting them to bed earlier is going to help with that. So we really see it towards the end of the day, especially the two of them when they get home from school. You know, they've held it together all day at school, and, you know, they're tired, they're irritable. So definitely towards the end of the day, if they don't, Abby has a thing, if she doesn't get her way, she will, you know, she'll say ugly things to Tessa and to us. I don't know if it's because she doesn't know how to express herself when she's angry or if she does it to manipulate the situation. But
let me interrupt you for a second, Amanda. So it sounds like kind communication, and I'm gonna encourage you to pick, you know, after school, because it sounds like in the later the day it gets harder and harder and harder. So maybe you focus in that area where they're kind of transitioning to the afternoon's activities or homework or whatever it is, but kind communication between the girls and in the family generally. Does that make sense?
That's perfect, yes.
Perfect. Okay. Erin, what about you?
Okay. Am I off mute? Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. I think I really want to focus on the way my two younger daughters, the 6 and 8, get absolutely crazy and insane when we drive in the car. And, of course, we have a minivan, and everyone fights about having to sit in the back, way back. So I have three daughters sitting right next to each other in the middle, and it's the young in the middle daughter who are just start as play, goofy,
you know, flopping on each other, and it's driving me crazy driving around, and then it inevitably turns to somebody getting hurt and mad and upset. And we are leaving on a 4-hour drive. I'm taking them just by myself to Atlanta tomorrow, and I'm dreading this drive. So I've been threatening, and I've pulled over recently and made one get in the back, and that's sort of their punishment. But that's sort of – I want a better way to handle that and get them to kind of realize that when I'm driving, they can't be wild in the car.
Got it. So you're taking aim on car craziness specifically on your drive to Atlanta tomorrow.
Right.
Well, wave at me when you go past, okay?
I will.
Okay. Brian, where do you want to take aim?
I want to take aim, and hopefully I'm not taking too broad, but I want to take aim on the evenings and kind of holding to a better schedule that is executed more pleasantly. And that may be a little generic, but it's really, you know, we've increased the afternoon dose of medication, so that's going to help a little bit. But and the afternoons generally go fairly well, and it's kind of the evening when things start to fall apart because the routine is not as settled. But, you know, kind of getting Theo to eat dinner with the rest of the group when we're having dinner together, and not having kind of the disruptions and appropriate responses to others, because sometimes his responses are what he may think is correct, but they're just not socially appropriate, or his perception of reality is not reality. So we're trying to help him align reality with his perception and respond appropriately.
Okay, so I heard two different things. You started with the kind of flowing through the evening schedule, which feels a little bit like focusing on the solution. But what you shifted to then was, more appropriate responses. Which one feels like the place to take aim?
I think you're right. I mean, I kind of start with what my goal is, and where we want to take aim to achieve that goal is the appropriate responses, particularly in the evening at the end of the day when I think, like, you know, John and Amanda had a great point, and some of the others did too. When these kids have been in school all day, regulating themselves so hard, and then an after-school activity, they kind of just are done and don't have the energy and drive left to do it in the evening, much like a lot of us as adults probably don't have as much drive and energy left in the evening to stay positive and work on things. So that's my goal, is at the end of the day when, you know, we can see the, you know, light at the end of the tunnel of getting to sleep, but to stay with appropriate responses then.
Well, and your point is good, Brian, and, we talked about activating the brain last time, and at that end of the day, whether your kid's on medication or not, and you know, the day wears us down, the day wears our kids down, a lot of this stuff is more difficult for them to hold together at the end of the day. And so I always try to encourage people, you know, pick a time that's a little, you know, as early as you can handle it. So be a little bit more gentle with everybody at the tail end of the day for a while until you have some successes, John and Amanda, for example, having some successes in the afternoon, you can take that into later in the evening. But as parents, sometimes we have to have more resilience late at night or when our kids are hangry is the word that I love to use. It's like they're hungry, they're angry, they're, you know, what end of the day, they're tired, all that other stuff. So, and Brian, do you have a clear picture in your head of what an appropriate response that's realistic for him would look like?
Yeah, it's really, you know, as we kind of execute that evening routine, right? I think he gets a little more sleep angry, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, he gets wind up and has a problem, and you don't settle in the bedroom. So it's really kind of saying, if it's bath or shower time, whatever we do, we've got to get our stuff ready for the next day. It's kind of executing that planning and transition to the evening with appropriate responses, not flying off the handle and staying there. So, I have an idea of what it needs to look like. It's just it's a matter of applying it.
Yeah. And so, we can talk about this more, but I know you said you might need to get off early. The thing that kind of just popped into my head is, you know, what is a realistic expectation for somebody who's really tired when they get triggered, and what should you hold them accountable for and not? And so for many of us, if we're really exhausted and worn out, getting triggered is a very automated response. And so it may not be realistic for him to not get triggered when he's that tired, but how he recovers from being triggered when you call it out, when you use a code word, when you whatever it is, that might be what you take aim on is, you know, it may not be realistic for him to not get triggered when
and
you
that's,
say,
that's
hey,
exactly,
buddy.
That's exactly what I was thinking. You know, if we say, hey, once you said, okay, let's take a quick break, how can we reset ourselves, and having him follow the path of the reset, you know, whether it's, okay, let's try again in 5 minutes. Let's give ourselves time to wind down. Let's give it another shot here. Here's what an appropriate response would look like. That's exactly what I'm thinking.
Great. Awesome. Okay, cool. Chiquita, you ready?
Okay, I'm ready now. Okay, so I want to celebrate going back to originally what I was talking about focusing on in our last, I guess, session before last was strengthening and building my relationship with my son. So the celebration was we kind of had a little disagreement yesterday because I felt like he was, you know, kind of back-talking me or whatever. And instead of getting angry like I normally did, I really took the time to get curious and sit down with him. I mean, he started crying. I sat down with him to help understand his perspective and for him to tell me, you know, how he was feeling and why he was feeling frustrated and what was happening to make him feel that way. And I feel like we really connected with, you know, some of the things that he shared with me that caused him to react the way that he did instead of me just getting angry saying, you know, don't talk back to me and, you know, because I said it, that's why you should do it. So I feel really good about that in terms of a celebration. In terms of taking aim, I kind of want to go a little deeper with that and figure out or work on ways to, I guess, have interaction with my son that does not escalate to a kind of back and forth or a talking back or a snippy attitude, because I feel like sometimes that happens and it may be part of, you know, the time of the day and everything he's gone through and that kind of thing may be a part of it, but I really want to dig deeper to figure out how I can mitigate those instances from happening between the two of us.
Awesome. Okay, great. Earl, do you have a sense of what it means to take aim, enough to take aim?
Well, it sounds like to pick out a major issue that's happening and something that you want to fix and then spend some time on fixing it. And I can tell you that the major issue that we deal with every single day of the week is my 11-year-old son, Charlie, wakes up first, usually around 5:30 or 6, and it's up. Everybody has to be up, particularly his 7-year-old brother. And Charlie's gone to his psychologist before, and his psychologist gave Charlie an assignment to, you know, come up with a list of 10 things you can do by yourself. And so 6 weeks later, we were down to come up with 2 things you can do by yourself. And that was still tough for him. He can't envision him functioning by himself without his brother or someone else being with him. And so we all start off grumpy because we've all been awakened. You know, sometimes he's a nice, sweet, can I take the iPad? But a lot of times he's already started a fight with his older sister because she doesn't want to be up first. And, you know, so it's very disruptive in the morning. So it's
great.
Like something that we can do for him to get him up and get him moving and quiet and still, so the rest of us transition into, you know, not having to get up out of our normal time until 7:30.
So I love the scenario. I'm going to challenge you to stay focused on the problem, which is that he's waking everybody up, and not on the solution, which was what can he do by himself, which my guess is part of why the solutions you've tried so far or the solutioning you've done is you've got to take a step back first and get curious, which is really our next step. And so first, and kind of really get really clear on several things that might be going on for him. So I just want to remind people, if you haven't watched the parent manual video that really walks you through the parenting action model, you know, make sure you do that. But that's on page 7. And after we take aim, the next step is to educate. It's like really getting curious about what's going on with our child, what's going on in our child's brain in those instances, what's going on for us at the moment. I just, the workshop I was at with Chiquita today, we were talking about triggers and stress and things like that, and we were talking about stress both for parents and for kids. Sometimes we have to pay attention to, you know, what's going on for me in this moment and how is that impacting the situation? What's going on in the school environment? So we want to educate first, and then we're going to move into planning phase. And in the planning phase is where we tackle, consider tackling with one of the four critical response areas, either activate the brain, parenting positively, shifting expectations, or using systems and structures. And so if you missed activating the brain last week, be sure to go back and listen to that recording. But today we're talking about parenting positively. So as I mentioned, we're on page 16 of the workbook, and parenting positively is really at its core about the priority you give to your relationship with your child relative to the challenges you're working on. And so if you're focused on a parenting positively, from a parenting positively perspective, the relationship you have with your child becomes the most important thing that you focus on. It's less about the fixing the problem or adjusting the situation or everything else, but it's more about how do I create a connection and a relationship with my child. And so there's a lot of research on positive psychology and the advantages of parenting of positive psychology. They show that in order to have a successful quote unquote relationship with someone, the ratio of corrections to praises needs to be 3 praises to every 1 correction, and that in order to have a positive, even better, you know, a strong relationship with someone, that ratio needs to be 5-1. And our kids get a lot of chance to be corrected. And so if, you know, you're like most everybody else, we spend a lot of time telling our kids what they're doing wrong, and we don't spend as much time telling them what they're doing right. And so it's really about figuring out ways to focus on what's working, to celebrate what's working, because we know that celebration is very motivating. If we can find the successes, we can find the solutions in the successes, we can move the situation forward if we can focus more on the successes. And the reality is that, you know, if we're focused on what's broken or what's not working, and we spend a lot of time going, oh, I got to fix this, this is terrible, this can't happen, it tends to wear us down. The quote I love is, what we focus on grows. And so if you spend a lot of time focusing on all the stuff that your kids do that you don't want them to do, you're going to see more of it. And that's just the way that the brain works. If you focus on what they're doing right, you're going to see more of it. And that's really a very interesting phenomenon that happens in the human brain. And so if we can focus with our kids on, and the same thing is true with our kids. So it's like if all they hear is all the stuff they did wrong, it wears them down. It can impact their self-esteem. And if we focus with them on the things that did work, even if they're little things, then it can help really move the situation forward. So, you know, it's not an easy thing, but it really can make a difference. And so sometimes it's just about celebrating interim steps. So the example I always give is, you know, if it's your child's responsibility to put the dishes in the dishwasher after dinner, you know, you and they only make it to the counter, you say, thanks so much for putting the dishes on the counter. Please put it in the dishwasher. You know, so you're not focusing on the, Johnny, you know you're supposed to put it in the dishwasher. You're celebrating the fact that they were able to accomplish something. So, as I mentioned, it's not always easy. So I'm kind of curious from the group, usually when parents end up in this program, they already get the whole positive parenting thing. They want to be positive. They have, and for whatever reason, it's a difficult thing, and it's a difficult thing for all of us. So I'm really kind of interested in hearing from you guys your thoughts on positivity, and then also, what are some of the things that tend to get in your way? So I'll just open it up to you guys.
This is Brian Dane. I've got a drop, but appreciate today's call. I'll catch up the rest on this, and this is definitely an area where I know we can improve and praise that positive. And I like the idea that you just said about praise the positive first step. And don't just ignore the bad, but give them a reminder of what more they need to do, which is how I understood you say that, which is great.
Great. Thanks.
Thanks.
Okay. Other thoughts from folks?
Hey, this is Erin. Oh, you want to go ahead?
Aaron.
Okay. I love the idea, and I'm not very good at it, and I feel like I used to be good at it, and after years of the same frustrations and same things, it's really easy to get kind of bogged down in just the frustration of it. So I love that we're thinking about this today and really get me sort of back into positive mode instead of sort of nag mode.
So do you think it's more about just having the reminder, Erin, or do you think it's about managing the overwhelm that you have from the life that you guys have been living? Something else? What do you think?
The reminder is a good start, but certainly the overload and just the, you know, taking aim eventually on a lot of those things that sort of contribute to that, I think will be really helpful. But even, like, I just feel like having that simple reminder is a really good start.
What are some things that you do to help remember, you know, if you wanted to keep this first of mind, you know, front of mind, what kinds of things might you do to kind of keep that in there?
Well, I tend to like taking notes. So I think what I will do is write myself a little note or a little smiley face, stick it in the car, put it on my dashboard. Nobody needs to know what it means, but sort of reminding me to keep that in my kind of front thinking.
Cool. Other people's thoughts on positivity and or what gets in the way?
Well, I'm in a situation right now where my ex and I are still sharing in a house together because we're in a lease through June of next year. And so our nanny and my ex and I all have different styles. And part of what happens is that I try to counter their negative with my positive all the time, which they kind of roll their eyes at because their thoughts are, if you don't step up and discipline them, they'll never learn, to the nanny going to the point where, well, in the black community, this is just called bad behavior. There's no such thing as ADHD. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. So, you know, it's like trying to educate her and bring her along to doctor's appointments and getting her in seminars. And so she's coming along with us now from where she was when she started. But that's still the battle I'm fighting, is to kind of not let the negative overrule the positive, like to –
No, and that makes perfect sense when you're in a situation where you feel like someone else is constantly correcting your child. And I think that people tend to do this when their kids end up in a really strict classroom as well. It's like, well, I want to give them a little bit of a break. And it makes perfect sense. It's a normal response. And I think that at the same time, what I heard you say, Earl, was that you know that inconsistency is part of what causes the problem. So,
right.
So my challenge to you is, how can you be positive and stand your ground with some boundaries?
So do you want to hear what I do now?
No, I'm just kind of, this is a challenge, so maybe you want to process it a little bit, but that's kind of, you know, just something to think about is, we're not telling, you know, it's not about not disciplining our kids. So positive, you can be positive and disciplining your kids at the same time.
Okay.
All right, other thoughts?
Hey, this is John, Amanda. When we are successful at this, it's when we prepare and plan for the morning routine or the return from school or bedtime. When we just stumble through the day, we find it's easier to be triggered and to get into that nagging mode. And then I just wanted to follow that with a question. You know, our concern is we've kind of been in the nagging mode, especially with our 9-year-old, for off and on for 9 years, and you talked earlier about the effect of that on self-esteem. Can we, are we going to be able to bring her back from that if we dedicate and discipline ourselves to this approach?
Well, I mean, every child is different, but it sounds like that's a strong goal for you. I think that part of what I experience a lot with families is their child retreats more than anything else. So it's kind of like they don't want to cooperate in terms of problem solving, particularly when they get older. There's this kind of sort of distance that's created. And so part of what you're trying to do is to reconnect with her on some level so that as she becomes more independent and older, you can continue to, you will be able to collaborate with her in terms of solving some of the challenges. I would say that it absolutely is possible with most kids. I think that it's something to really focus in on. And again, I'll say the same thing to you that I said to Earl. There are ways to have boundaries and also parent positively. And the thing that kind of popped into my head more than anything else for both of you guys is, you know, if the rule becomes the bad guy and not you, it can make a difference. And mm-hmm. so, you know, it's something as simple as, oh, sweetie, I'm so sorry. I wish that you could play Xbox tonight. And the rule is that if the homework is not done, and there's nothing I can do about it because that's the rule. And I think that, you know, where we get into trouble is that we tend to bend the rules or we aren't consistent with the rules, and then it becomes us that's the bad guy instead of the rule that's the bad guy. And so, you know, if you have a particular area where you are getting pushback, you know, to encourage you to kind of get really clear on what your boundary is and put something in place that makes sense for the family. John, I don't know if that resonates for you in this instance, but.
Yeah, it does, and Amanda has something to say first. I'll let her go, and then I'll just comment real quickly.
I love the whole idea of, you know, the rule being the bad guy, and I think that, that we struggle with that because for so long my no has not always been no, and Abby, she's just so good at the talk that she can – but mom, you know, and she comes up with a compromise at work, and then I'll say, oh, okay. Whereas I need to just stop, and the no needs to be the no, and the rule needs to be the rule, and that's just the way it is. So
well,
that
and
is
I think
that's
just the reality is that you can, I think it's a yes and, Amanda, because I think that if you do that in every aspect, it makes it more difficult. If you have some things that are non-negotiable, that's another place. The other thing, and I actually do this with my kids, is kind of like I always give them space to give their opinion. I don't always change mind, you know. And
gotcha.
So it's kind of like if you give them space to say, okay, and that's the rule. So the rule is you always get to give me your opinion. I will always make sure I understand it, so I'll state it back to you. So you feel like I should let you do this because blah, blah, blah. Thank you for sharing your opinion. Let me think about it a minute, and then you decide. You know, so that the dynamic becomes I get to make the decisions, or the rule gets to make the decisions, and as a parent, we can change and evaluate the rules, but we don't always do that. Does that help,
gotcha.
Amanda?
Yes, very much. Thank you.
So then my follow-on question is, you know, if we successfully apply that method and we are positive with boundaries and consistent, our hope is that Abby's image of herself becomes more positive.
I think that's a great objective. I think that the reality is I don't have a crystal ball.
Right.
I mean, there's lots of things that impact it, but I think that generally if we are able to focus on what's working and focus on the positive, you know, our kids tend to respond better to the carrot than they do the stick, mostly because the cause and effect doesn't often work with our kids' brain. They just don't get the connection between what they do and what's going to happen next. It's just they're not developmentally mature enough in a lot of instances.
Right.
So,
this is Erin. Can I just share something that's worked with our family a little bit?
Absolutely, Erin.
I think it's been really positive the occasions that I have sat down with one of my kids and just apologize to them for
not really doing this right and really being honest and saying, look, I am learning how to be a mom and I'm trying to figure this out. And I realize I've been, whatever it is, too much. And the way that they react, they sort of just like crumble and melt and start to cry. And it's such an honest exchange between the two of us, and we can just sort of reset. And then so then I might say, you know, I've been nagging too much and I've been making you feel lousy and blah, blah, blah. And let's figure out a way that we can get this done without me having to yell or whatever. And it sort of brings them around, and you, and I can say, you're a really, really, really good kid, and I'm just letting myself get too frustrated, whatever it is. And I think that goes a long way to bringing them back to your side, to feeling good, and just sort of resetting and making kind of a, all right, let's do this together sort of atmosphere.
And I think that's great. Thank you for sharing that, Erin. I've had the same experience, and what you're demonstrating is a couple of things. One is that everybody makes mistakes, and it's okay, which is part of what this whole thing is, you know, our kids get corrected all the time, and, you know, just because they're corrected doesn't mean that they're bad or they're wrong. It's just what they did missed the mark. And it shows a connection and a partnership with them. So that's great.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to say, this is Earl. My mom was a nagger when I was little, and what always bothered me was that it was always, Earl, you need to, Earl. And so every time I heard my name, I felt like it was a bad thing. And it
that's
wasn't
great.
Until my mom went back to work when I was 13 and my grandfather lived with us, and I had to start doing a lot of stuff around the house, and he would just say, Earl, you're such a big help. Oh, my God, Earl, I can't believe how much stuff you do. And he honestly became the closest adult in my life from the time I was 13 to 18 years old, because everything I did was positive to him. And, awesome. Of course, once he passed away, my mother and I reconnected in a much better way, because she had seen me really kind of blossom and be able to function at school and stuff too. Because I'd always been sitting next to the teacher's desk for talking too much, or I'd always been out clapping erasers for throwing something in class, or not sitting still, or jiggling my foot, or looking out the window. That had always been my history. And then she would just get so frustrated, because even the semesters I got all A's, in the comment section they would still write, capable of doing better work. And I was so frustrated, because I thought, I'm getting all A's and I don't know how to be capable of doing better work and still get all A's. And nobody would explain it to me. So once it changed from being my name, and once it changed into being positive, that was what really turned me around.
Well, and I appreciate your sharing that. As parents, it's nice to hear that, because you're really kind of sharing what happened to you in a similar situation that I think a lot of our kids are in. So thanks for that, Earl. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay. Any other thoughts on positivity, or what's hard about it, or what you like about it?
Hey, Diane, this is Chiquita. So I guess what I'm struggling with is, I agree, I think one of the members on the call talked about it. Positive parenting happens when you plan, and, you know, so you don't get triggered, and I've been working on that. But there are times that triggers happen and you can't plan for them. You know, it's just like a spur-of-the-moment thing, and all of a sudden you're triggered and you go down this spiral that becomes negative. So I guess where I'm, like, struggling is, how do you manage that to get yourself back to a place that's, you know, parenting positively when you both are in a stressful situation?
No, I think that's great. And I think that is, the triggers are absolutely one of the things that get in the way of parenting positively, because, you know, something really gets our goat, it pushes our button, all of a sudden we're in fight or flight, or, you know, the step before that is kind of, you know, we're either on the defensive or on the offensive, same thing with our kids. And it's hard. It's impossible, I think, for many people to parent positively when you're in that place, because, you know, you're in that, this is what we're talking about this morning, right? So you're in that primal part of your brain where your choices are fight or flight. There is no praise in that, right? So you have to get back in the problem-solving part of your brain. There's a great webinar that Dr. Tom Brown did for us last year, and he was talking about the mad dad, I think is what he was referring to. And so what happens a lot of times when we get hyper-focused on intense emotion is the part of us that remembers that we don't want to yell at our kids is disconnected completely. And so we're just yelling because we're just in this primal sort of place. And so that's why trigger management becomes so important. It's about, you know, knowing what triggers you, reclaiming your brain, taking a few deep breaths. And we do an entire class on triggers. There's lots of great articles on triggers. But really, trigger management is that first step, because if you're not calm and you're trying to parent from a place of not calm, it's hard. So, you know, what I always say at our house is we recover well. We're emotionally intense, but we recover well. And so when you do get triggered, it's about, you know, saying those things that, like Aaron was mentioning, it's like, I really lost it, and I'm sorry, and I know losing it is normal, but it's not fun, and I don't want to do it as much as I've been doing it. And you're a good kid, and I know you want to do as good as you can, and I want to focus on remembering that. Or whatever it is that recovery for you when you do lose it, because it's pretty normal to lose it. What stands out for you in that, Chiquita?
I agree. I think that's kind of what's happening with me. I think the instance last night that's exactly what I did, because I kind of lost it, and then I, you know, circled back and said, hey, I'm sorry, and tell me what you're feeling. I got really curious, and it really helped, dissipate the situation and make it more palatable for both of us, but just wanted to make sure I was on the right track related to that.
Yeah. What comes up for anybody else as Chiquita's sharing? Okay. Cool. Anybody else get triggered?
Oh, constantly. They're triggers of the three worst words we have in our house are stupid, dummy, and ugly. And they're not allowed to use them, and they know it. So what they do is pass by each other in the hallway and mutter them under their breath to each other, and you know it immediately because the other one explodes and says, X called me ugly or stupid or... You know, and it's like, you know, that's when I want to lose it and line them up on the sofa and, you know, make them balance a spoon in their mouths with drops of water in it, and the first one who spills it, you know, all kinds of weird punishments that I heard about as a kid, because it's like, you guys are driving me crazy with this. And they don't care how much they hurt each other, because the point was, I want to hurt you.
Right. So two things, Earl. One is kind of managing your own triggers, and then the other is getting really curious and really noticing, you know, what do they get out of making each other angry? What is it that is important about that for them? And just kind of noticing and paying attention to what are they really looking for? And maybe having a little compassion for that. I mean, it's got to be an adventure living in a household with a 9-year-old, an 11-year-old, and a 12-year-old. There's a lot of energy there. And trying to figure out what your place is in that has got to be really interesting.
Okay. Well, and, you know, it is an adventure, and that's exactly the word I use. Like when I pick them up from school or at Saturday morning and they're all with me, and I always say, well, should we go to the library and have an adventure, or should we have an adventure and then go to the library? You know, so everything's an adventure, and it's just how they want to form it or put it together. They get to put it together how they want to. But
So I'm going to switch to Aaron here for a second. Aaron, when you think about this issue with the car and the craziness that's going on, how can you apply some of this positive parenting?
So, good question. What I did last week is I just said very calmly, hey guys, if you can show me that you can ride together next to each other, you know, without getting crazy, then great. If not, I'm not going to say a word. I'm just going to pull over. I'm going to pull somebody out, and that person's going to be in the back. And So I thought I was being real positive with something effective, and I've had to do it, but I'm scowling and angry and stomping and doing it angrily. And I realize I feel like my big triggers are when I feel like totally out of control and nobody cares what I say and they just want to do what they're going to do, and it isn't until I start really yelling that anybody snaps out of it. And so I guess I don't know how to handle that.
Yeah, well, so a couple of things come up. Number one is what is a realistic expectation for, you know, the kids in the car at the end of the day? That's the first thing that kind of comes up for me. The second thing is, you know, do your kids respond better to the carrot or to the stick? And could you set it up so that there was a reward or a celebration for no conflict on the way home,
right,
as opposed to a punishment when there is?
Right. No, that's probably the right way to do it, and I haven't been thinking in the carrots as much. I've been thinking sticks.
Well, and that's the reality is you're getting triggered.
Yeah. You might want
right.
to try something like a raffle of 1, 2, 3, where the number one seat is the back seat, because they get to be by themselves, they get to have the most room, they can have more stuff.
Right, you'd think want to be back there.
Yeah. You know,
so
what Earl's
pointing out is that, you know, you're creating a motivation for them to behave, because it's hard at the end of the day to hold it all together when you're trapped in the
right.
car and you want to be running around and getting rid of a bunch of energy because you've been holding it together all day long. You know, it's you know, number one is activating the brain. You know, is there something you need to do to help their brains not be, you know, so crazy in that time period? And then, you know, what can you do to motivate them to have a little bit more peace in the car?
Right. Yeah. Good idea. That's good. And I bring snacks, so they're eating on the way. As soon as we get in the car, they're eating some protein. So, you're right. It's just the crazy, and they're not even fighting. They're just goofing. But it's just that letting it out at the end of the day. So you're right. I'll come up with something that, you know, something, you know, if they could stay up for 5 extra minutes at night, they'd be thrilled. So maybe I need to do something like that.
Well, the other thing to think about, Aaron, is, I'm sorry, what, Earl?
What do they listen to on the way home?
Oh, well, good question. We usually listen to a book on tape that they love, and we just finished the entire Harry Potter series. So right now we're in a void, and that's part of the problem. And so they haven't been able to agree on something to start, and they just now they want to restart Harry Potter, so I've got it on loan from the library and picking it up today. So that usually brings a lot of peace to the car.
Yeah. Well, and the thing that one of the things, sometimes people use the radio as the motivator. So whoever's the quietest gets to pick the radio station or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That can be a motivator. I mean, I think the other thing is just kind of what is realistic and what is it that bugs you about it? Is it that you're feeling that it's out of control? And do you have like 10 minutes of craziness before everybody gets in the car and have kind of fun with it? And then it's kind of like, okay, let's get all the extra energy out. Let's do a dance party or something in the driveway before we get in the car, and so that when we're in the car, we can start to mellow out or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'll think about all of those. It's good.
Cool. Awesome. All right. So we're getting close to the end of the time here, and I want to take us back to the workbook on page 18. Sorry. Are the 4 questions we ask every week as a wrap-up. And so what I want you to do is to take a minute, jot down some notes on these 4 questions. What did I focus on or pay most attention to? What's my clarity or takeaway from the call? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how can I set myself up for success with this action? So take a minute, jot some notes, and I'd love to hear from each of you one aha you had, and what action you're going to move forward with.
This is John and Amanda. I think a big aha that we had was when you talk about praising the positive, when the girls are fighting, we tend to point out and discipline when they're fighting, but we don't praise that much when they're getting along. So I think that would be make a huge impact with them.
Awesome.
Yeah. So and our
preparing for the three critical times of the day.
Yeah, and like John just said, preparing for the three critical times of the day.
Morning return from school and bedtime.
Yeah, morning return from school, bedtime, and I just think our big takeaway is positive. Focus on the positive.
Great. Awesome. Chiquita, what about you?
Okay, so my the thing that resonated with me the most today was again about when you slip up and when you are triggered, you know, for something that you haven't prepared for, how to recover from that, and that comes from being curious and just connecting with your child to, you know, kind of apologize. I mean, there are things that parents do that you can ask, you know, for forgiveness for, and that really resonates with them. So that is a big takeaway for me. And then what am I going to do, or what I'm going to do to move forward is focus on, again, like some of the other parents said, the things that he's doing right and praising those and using that 3-to-1 model where I'm doing more praising instead of nagging or criticizing, and focusing on a carrot more than a stick for changing the behavior that I want to see change in him.
Great. Erin, what about you?
Okay, so I'm definitely focusing on the car sillies. And just like Chiquita just said, I've got to offer more carrots and stop with a stick. So coming up with ways to really give them some incentive, that'll be my focus. And to celebrate the small successes when they do make it, you know, the 15-minute ride home from school without getting wild, to really praise them and that kind of thing. So moving forward, I need to go pick up that book on tape today and make sure that, you know, the car setting is one that is conducive to all the getting along. And I hesitate, but I probably do need to come up with some sort of better seating arrangement in the car. I just don't want to deal with all the complaining.
Thanks for that. Thank Earl for that. Earl,
yes,
what about you? What check out for us and let us know what your aha was and what you want to do about it.
I think my aha was remembering to separate the behavior from the kid. And I didn't really think about that until I told you the story about my own experience. And I thought, oh, yeah, that worked really well for me. Although I've known that intellectually since we've had these kids. And then what I have to focus on is Charlie getting up so early and really finding out what he needs or what he needs or what he expects at that time, Diane?
I'm trying to think. So getting curious about what is it that's for him in that morning when he's waking everybody up, instead of giving him a solution. It's like, what is it about getting everybody up in the morning? Is it that he's lonely? Is it that he doesn't know? Is it because what you're suggesting is that it's about not knowing what to do with himself? And
right.
Maybe it's lonely. Maybe it's something else. But you know, it's kind of like if you get clear with him on what the challenge is in the morning, instead of starting with the first solution, it might help you to come up with a different solution.
Yeah, and the loneliness came from his psychologist, didn't come from Charlie or from us. The psychologist just sort of started there. What are 10 things you can do? Like busy work. And I thought, well, I don't know if that's going to solve the problem if he doesn't think he needs to do 10 things, you know. So I think that was the focus, and that's my takeaway, and focusing on him and not his behavior.
Great, awesome. All right, any parting thoughts? Great call today. Next week, Elaine and I and Jeremy are going to all be in New Orleans at the National CHAD Conference. I'm doing a Lifeline call on Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, so join us for that if you can. And then the next PSS group meeting will be a week from Thursday the 19th, and we'll talk to you guys then.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Welcome. Bye-bye.
The moderator has left the conference. The conference is now completed. Goodbye.